coming to you from our new home at DynastyLeagueFootball.com and a DLF family of podcasts, we are the Superflex Super Show. We talk QB values, Superflex strategies, evaluate and debate Superflex trades, plus our own twist on Superflex team management with exercises like Tinderflex, Super Six, and You Are Nuts. So when you're done with this awesome DLF podcast, find us on Twitter at Superflex Show and join us in a discussion of the fastest growing format in all of fantasy football, Superflex, on the Superflex Super Show.
Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got them. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church. But I'ma keep tapping return, I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges, I yearn for the feeling I earn. I'ma win, it's a turn, you had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict, Russ and Brian are the names. Trade Addicts Pod, let's go.
I am Dynasty Outhouse, and I have a trading problem.
And I am Zach Reed, not Brian Haar, and I also have a trading problem.
Tonight, Brian Haar has a real-life problem. our boy had to work, so he couldn't record, which was sad, because Zach almost said, no, Brian, no recording, but I begged, I pleaded, and he came on. So thank you, Mr. Reed, which he insisted I call him.
This has been a long time coming, and I'm excited to be on with you. I am disappointed I didn't get to be on with Brian. I listen every week, and I said to you before we recorded, but he's got this voice for radio, and every time he talks before he comes on, I want to hear Sporting News Radio, Brian Haar.
I have to start to. I'm going to use that and just paste that in right before he introduces himself. All right. Well, welcome everybody to session 58 of the Trade Addicts Podcast, a member of the DLF family of podcasts. Spoiler alert, Zach Reed's our guest today, you know, whoops. So I have to imagine anyone listening to us has been listening to you forever already, but just in case, tell the fine people who you are, what you do, and where they could find what it is you that you do.
Well, I am Zach Reed. I am the lesser half of the Dynasty Dummies podcast. I record every week with Kyle LeBrec over there, and I am at Tacit Assassin 13 on Twitter. If you want to get a hold of me, but yeah, we've been doing that podcast for 3.5 years now. So we're not quite one of the big boys. We're not an OG, but we weren't far behind.
Yeah, I remember when I first started listening to podcasts, it was literally like 2-ish years ago when the Dynasty Blueprint like first started. And so all I knew in life, there was the Fantasy Feast with Evan Silva and then Blueprint Now with Ryan McDowell. And Ryan was just like, been listening to this Dynasty Dummy show. You guys should go listen to it. So I'm like, all right, well, I guess I got to listen to this. And so in my mind, you have always been one of the big guys. So I have to be honest that, like, you know, we've talked back and forth a few times for the past couple of weeks, and now you're on my show, and there is a little part of me that is still geeking out on the inside.
Oh, no, so, no. Don't, like, no. Like, and I get it.
I purposely did not say this before we started recording because I knew it would embarrass the hell out of you. And I had to.
Like, I understand the sentiment because I get that way around Ryan and around Scott Fish and even around John Bosch, although he hates when I say stuff like that. I get it, but I'm just a dummy, man. I'm one of the people. I am not like, don't geek out over me. Let's have some fun.
Well, I mean, to be fair, this is me having fun with you. So, you know, I'm still good right now. You know, I'm sorry if you're not. All right. So let's get into our little interview session that, you know, at least I like to do. How long have you been playing fantasy football?
So fantasy football since the mid 90s. So I would say somewhere in the vicinity of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the running back. So I don't know what that is. What that's like? What 90?
I forgot about that.
Seven. Yeah. So I got into fantasy baseball first. My dad is a baseball guy, and so I got into like a dynasty baseball league with him. And then because I'm a degenerate, it progressed into football and some basketball. But I played. Like I said, I started in fantasy football right around the time I got to high school. So it was. It was somewhere around 96 or 7.
But. Yeah. All right. So you're a little old. That's fine. We could work with
that's,
that.
I've got the hair to prove it. You know.
No, hey, man, you shave because you want to, not because you have to. It's fine.
Yeah, since I was 14, don't worry about it.
How long have you been playing Dynasty for?
Dynasty, just about 6 years. So I'm kind of a neophyte in Dynasty, and that was all because of Kyle. And he was working as a manager at a Radio Shack, and I was delivering FedEx, and I would stop by and talk football with him. And he was like, we should start a Dynasty League. And I was like, okay. And so we did. And then he said, we should start a podcast. And so it was kind of this hand in hand where I got into Dynasty football, and then I got into podcast. I mean, you have to jump in with 2 feet with this. I know you know, because you've got, what, 7 or 8 Trade Addicts leagues going now, and how many leagues are you in?
29.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. You have to jump into this, and that's just kind of how it happened, where, you know, it was I don't know, it was six years ago, I think, and you know, you just get that bug, and we always say, you know, Dynasty is the kind of mainlining. I mean, your redraft is your gateway, but then you get the hard stuff, and you can't stop, and you're just into Dynasty and immersed in it all year round. I mean, that's the beauty of it too. Is here we are, it's May, and football is not even like a speck on the horizon, and we're right into it because we've got rookie drafts and we've got, you know, all of this stuff going on. It's I love it.
Real quick, just to keep piling on that you're old, by the way, in case you don't know, kids out there, Radio Shack was an old chain store, electronic store, well before Best Buy was ever around.
Yeah, it was right around the time of service merchandise and Zales, you know, all those sort of things.
It's like I don't remember the last time I heard the words Radio Shack and legitimately giggled when you said it. So to put it out there, I think you're about 3 years older than I am. So
it feels like a gap, man. I said this, it was a while ago, but I said, you know, a lot of the best fantasy analysts around, and there are so many new ones coming up, can't rent a car and drive it across state lines yet. Mm-hmm. Like, there are so many fantastic young dynasty and fantasy football analysts. I mean, we get Riley Bymaster who comes on with us a lot, and he's fantastic, and he just turned 21.
Did I mean, he like, really?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, and he's amazing, and there are a whole bunch of guys like that, and I feel a little jealous, a little like I you know, was born too early, or you know how you have that feeling, or maybe I just didn't get there in time. I mean, you make me feel old. When I first started playing fantasy baseball, the internet wasn't really a thing, and so you paid for spin stats. Okay, so you sent away your lineups, and there was a guy who I guess that was his company, was to put together your league and your statistics. And so every Thursday they would mail the package of statistics back from Spin Stats. And that's where I am old. I mean, I guess. Yeah,
I did the newspaper thing for playoff hockey, fantasy playoff hockey. And it was back when I didn't even know that it was called fantasy something. We just called it a playoff challenge.
Yeah.
I feel you. Don't worry about it. but let's get back to the embarrassing stuff. Besides, let's get back to the fantasy football embarrassing stuff. Now, I heard you talking on other shows, your show and the Open Bar, that you claim to have a trading problem and that your problem is that you're just not very good at it.
I'm terrible.
So I am hoping you have at least one or two bad trades on the tip of your noggin that you can throw at us to give us an idea of just how terrible you think you are.
So early on in DeAndre Hopkins' career, I traded Nuke and a first to get LeSean McCoy trying to win the league. And not only did I not win the league, I then gave up DeAndre Hopkins and what became, you know, somebody else. I don't even remember who it was, but it doesn't even matter because I gave up LeSean McCoy at the end of his career, or I gave up DeAndre Hopkins for LeSean McCoy at the end of his career. Like, I'm still kicking myself over that. I guess it's not as bad as when I drafted David Johnson, or I didn't draft David Johnson. I drafted Mike Davis instead of David Johnson. It's going to pay off this year, though.
Let's say this year. You got it. Right? All right. Well, do you have anything good that you could think of to make yourself feel a little better right now?
I mean, this past year, I won the league. I'm not sure if it was a great trade, but it was a great trade in the fact that I beat Kyle in our home league.
That's the
league that's been going for 6 years. Yeah. And I traded Amari Cooper and Dalvin Cook. So you don't love to do that. But I got Zeke back and won the league. And so now I'm sitting on a team with Zeke and Saquon Barkley. And so, like, I've got a pretty good run here, and I should compete again. It's one of those where you don't love the trade, but I love the win.
Oh, that's what matters, man. You know, having fun and winning. I mean, and when the two can happen at the same time, you know, that's the dream.
It is. It's the old Bull Durham. I love winning, man. It's like better than losing.
All right. So what is a guiding principle you take with you whenever you're evaluating trades or offering a trade?
I listen to smart people. I listen to your show. I listen to shows like Dynasty Wall Street, you know, listen to John Bosch and Kevin Cotillo and Riley. And like, I am just so bad at either my valuations are totally different, or I just don't, like, I don't enjoy the haggle. And a lot of people love that back and forth. Mm-hmm. I don't. Like, I'll sit there and I'll send you an offer, and half the time it gets snap accepted, and I'm like, oh no, like, what did I do? And then the other half the time they'll just, you know, they'll come back with something. I'm like, that's fine, but this is not what I, like, what I want to get done is this. How do we do that without talking, I don't want this interaction. I'll have the interaction all day long on Twitter when it's about somebody else's team. But, like, I don't know. I'm so bad at that. And I guess mainly what I do to avoid that is I will trade for draft picks. I will draft running backs, and then everybody loves running backs right now. And so I'll trade running backs like crazy to get receivers, you know, veteran receivers who produce, and then amass draft picks and draft running backs. I mean, that's kind of been my philosophy, but again, I'm so bad at it. So you know, your show, Trade Addicts and Wall Street and some of these other shows that really get into trading, those are kind of my Bibles, because that's not, I recognize that I have that as a flaw. And so I've always been of the belief that if you the smartest people I know are the people who understand when they don't know something, and they ask the people who do. And that's what makes you intelligent to me.
All right. Well, no, okay. So I want to talk about this for a little bit. Do you try and use any sort of ADP, any sort of calculator, any sort of trade evaluator? It's like, do you try and just trust yourself, or do you try and use outside resources?
So, I mean, I subscribe to DLF and I use the ADP and that sort of thing, but I also find that league to league, and especially when you're going back and forth between like our home league, which is not a bunch of sharps. I mean, they're good dynasty players, but they're guys who have not immersed themselves in fantasy
they're
football.
Not Twitter 24/7. People.
Exactly. I mean, and they're like, there are some really good owners in that league, and there are some guys who really have a direction for their team. There are some other guys who will put 7, 8, 9 guys in a trade calculator and then send it to you for Odell Beckham. And you're like, you know, I get that they balance out, but that is not really what this tool is for. Mm-hmm. So bouncing from that to, I just got in a league called the 12 Olympians, which is Jesse Reeves from FF Statistics, and it's J Mike is in it, and Derek Brown, and like there are a whole bunch of Casey Kasem. There are a whole bunch of like really, really sharp people, and now all of a sudden that calculator doesn't matter. That ADP doesn't necessarily matter because these are people who are all thinking independently for themselves. So like, take for example, like I heard Eitan Mosia is in that league, and I heard him probably a month ago now. I've got it written. I've got my notebooks. Leo Pasigo would be very proud of me because I do keep my notebooks. About a month and a half ago, I heard him talking about Kareem Hunt. And talking about how he's going to be a buyer into Kareem Hunt, who happens to be on my team in the draft. And so I think that I should be able to move him mm-hmm. to Eitan at some point. Whether or not I can pull that off, I don't know. Because again, I am terrible at this. I'm gonna be in DMs. You're gonna be on my speed dial when that happens.
Oh, I look forward to it. That sounds like fun, man. No, see, it's, you know, well, first of all, I have my subscription to DLF. I have my subscription to Dynasty Trade Calculator. I use all of that stuff. Not in the way that dude offering for OBJ does. Because, yeah, that makes me want to slap people. But it's all a wonderful piece of a puzzle because you can have your evaluations of people. But what the world thinks matters.
Yeah, well, certainly.
It's always, you know, each league is its own market, and that is very important to understand. So, you know, what a player is worth on the calculator, what is worth to one league is not what it's worth to another league. It's all super different, but, you know, we always like to say it's just pieces of a puzzle to throw together, and you just got to hope you can get your, you know, shapes to match close enough with someone else's that, you know, you put them together and you get a trade done. So it's... different sort of trade tools and trade strategies always come into play. And I know a lot of people that are like you, like me trying to deal with like Peter Howard or Shane Manila are two people that are just like, no, I sent you an offer that you should accept. So just take it. And I'm like, no, let's do this first. And they're just like, I don't want to talk. I just, no, just do this. And I'm like, all right.
Yeah, see, Shane and I, we're kindred spirits when it comes to that, because I'll see Shane panic on somebody, or I'll see Shane get like come be high on somebody, and so a couple years ago we were in a league, and I was like, okay, I want Golden Tate. This was back when Golden Tate was Golden Tate, mm-hmm. and I said, I'll give you a 20, it was a 2019 first for Golden Tate. And he was like, no. And I was like, okay, I'll give you a, and then he sent back and he was like, give me the 2019 first and a 2018 second. I said, done. I don't care. Like, that's fine. It's the second is not going to break me. Mm-hmm. And it was just a bang, bang. You know, we got it done. There wasn't a lot of haggling. That's my kind of trade. I'll even oftentimes come in over. Well, I mean, the Amari Cooper, Dalvin Cook side, that's probably an overpay for Ezekiel Elliott, especially in the market last year. It was right as Cooper had been traded and he was, you know, really starting to hit. And I was like, you know, and looking back, maybe that was a bad move, But I needed Zeke. I needed a stud to plug in my lineup. I didn't have room for both Cooper and Cook. And I overpaid, got it done, because I don't want to haggle. And so it hurts me. I like that really is a flaw in my fantasy football playing. My dynasty game is trading.
Well, see, the thing is, it's not necessarily a flaw. You do it, you know, at least like you're saying now, you knew what you were doing.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, we'll take results over process in this one because, hey, you won the league and that's what matters. But it's like we always preach that, you know, there's multiple ways to get trading done. There not most people don't trade the same way. There's always variations on a theme. And then there's idiots like me who... just depends how I'm feeling that day. You know, sometimes I don't want to talk to people. Sometimes I'm just yelling at Brian to give me Keenan Allen, or yesterday where I'm like, oh my God, just take Keenan Allen from me and give me someone else. Cause I have a team. I have no idea what to do with. So I figured just let me sell my studs because why not? I don't think what you're doing is wrong. It's just a way of doing it. Just like the way you value people isn't wrong. It's just the way you value people.
Yeah,
so it's all just a starting point. And if other people were smart like you and kept that notebook, they'd know how you like to deal and would be able to deal with you better.
Well, and that's
their fault, not yours.
I appreciate you're an enabler. And like the other way I mitigate this is when I get players that are kind of at their peak value. And this, again, is going back to Dynasty Wall Street and DTC and DLF. And when I get players where I'm like, okay, well, this is their peak value. And I start looking at, because one of my strengths is evaluation, and especially rookie classes. I've done, and look, nobody is any good at this, but I've been able to identify some players that I liked in each rookie class. And I've been pretty fortunate that most of them have done well. And so what I will do is I'll sit there and look. And so 2 years ago, I was looking at the 2018 or 2017 and 2018 class. So 3 years ago. So I got a whole bunch of 2017 seconds with 2018 firsts. And so then I started doing that again, where I started, you know, selling players off and getting 2019 seconds, 2020 first. And so you can kind of read that class, because I'm looking for running backs in a rookie draft. And so that has been, I guess, my saving grace as far as trading is looking at getting, you know, that second up close, because people are worried about what's happening right in front of them. We're all about what have you done for me lately. And so people, you know, right now everyone's talking about the 2020 class. Okay, but the 2021 class is coming right behind that. And if you stacked up three or four firsts in the 2021 class by getting 2020 seconds, you know, tacked with those, that's going to be a win for you. It's to me, it ends up being a matter of percentages, and the more kicks you have at the can, the better off you're going to be in a particular class.
You got to be careful. This dummy facade is falling off real fast, man, because this is some pretty strong process that you're showing right now.
Well, let's not get crazy. These are just mitigating my own flaws. This is what I have to do to not suck.
That's our real goal in life, not suck.
That's it.
All right. So I want to jump into one quick Twitter question before we get into the actual fantasy football. Again, if you listen, people out there, if you listen to the Dynasty Dummies, if you listen to, what else do you, I mean, Superflex, I think you did something for the Dynasty Game Night. Zach does some openings. He does wonderful, wonderful parodies that literally will have you laughing and looking like an idiot while you're driving in your car, because yeah. And if you want to know who to blame for DJ Shark, it's this guy. So if me, Brian, and Stompy singing that has ever pissed you off, it's this guy's fault. So Bobby Koch at Wrecked Fantasy wants to know, of all the parody songs you've recorded, what is your favorite?
The next one, whatever the next one is, like that's that, to me, this is, that's the thing. It's so much fun doing them. And that's why I do them. It gives me a creative outlet. I'm a terrible singer, by the way. But it's always coming up with that next lyric, that next turn of phrase, that next, you know, this week it's Mikkel Hardman, Mikkel Hardman, you know, and it's coming up with whatever that, you know, that little hook is going to be. I think my favorite one to record was DJ Chark, because I got the whole family involved. I got both of my sons. Yeah. I got, my oldest son is autistic and he's absolutely brilliant. And he actually was the one who came up with the DJ Chark song. and we were outside, we were building a snowman, and I was like, what do you want to name your snowman? And he said, DJ Chark. I was like, DJ Chark? I was like, I've gone too far down the rabbit hole of fantasy football. And then he was like, yeah, DJ Chark, do, 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 do. And I was like, oh my goodness, we have to do that. And so I got Caleb, and then I got my youngest son, and I recorded my wife unbeknownst to her. She was trying to show the boys what to do. And yeah, I was like, click, we're going to record that. So it ended up being a family thing. So that was the most fun to record. But again, it's the next one. The next one is always my favorite one.
See, last week's draft stinks had me rolling. Like I was pulling into my garage when that was starting, and I literally sat in my car for a minute in my garage for about a minute and a half, because I wasn't turning that off in the middle.
It always gives me a kick when people will put me in the same sentence as Gabe Gearing, and they'll say, you know, the only time I don't listen to podcasts on 1.5 or 2x speed is when it's a Gabe open or when it's one of Zach's parodies. And I'm like, I'm Gabe is the master at opens, and I'm not in his league, but it's always a little bit of a kind of, it's nice to hear that people are enjoying them. I mean, that's the other part, I guess, of why I do it. I mean, it's mostly for me, it's mostly my own edification and amusement, but if other people are getting a kick out of it, that's good too. I know it makes Kyle shake his head, so.
That's the real goal of comedy, isn't it? To make someone just go, oh my God.
Well, I've got that down. He was singing, I had a Jeremy Hill, I did Weezer, Beverly Hills, but it was Jeremy Hill. This was a couple of years ago. This was when we were building a studio, and that was, I had that in my head, and so then he had it in his head, because if you can't pass on an earworm to your co-host, really, what are you doing with your life?
And what's the point? All right, so it is draft time. That is just the time of year we're in, which means it's going to be rookie draft time. Now, I heard you say the cheating answer on the open bar, that when you guys talked about when you like to have your rookie drafts, you said you like to have them spaced out, which is just completely cheating. So if you had one rookie draft, when would you make it?
If I had one rookie draft, it would be my home league draft. And so then you're beholden to when you can get 12 guys together in the same room with some pizza and some beer and spend an evening. And that is the best time to have a draft. Like that. Again, that's a cheating answer.
No, but that's real. Anybody out there? Because I know, like, Brian has always said he's never done a live draft.
Oh my!
Find a way. It's so good.
They're awesome. Like it really is. Like I can't even. It's my favorite league, and it's not. Again, it's not the flashy league. It's not a league with a bunch of industry sharps. It's not even the Scott. Like, I love the Scott Fishbowl, but even that, like, it doesn't hold a candle to that home league draft where you've got 12 guys, you've got bragging rights. You can sit there. We even have a trade room where if you're having conversations out in the open, you can, you know, follow me to the trade room, and we may have to have a different one this year because I think it might be Kyle's son's nursery now, but we'll figure something out. But it all happens, and you're on the clock. It's not like a slow draft where you've got time to think about it and you've got time to make trades. You're pulling triggers and you're making trades in the middle of that draft. And last year I had a trade in place, and all of a sudden somebody across the room said, no, I'll offer you more. And then that trade got shipped over to the other guy. And there's nothing you can do about it. I mean, it's all fair. We didn't take it in the trade room. But yes, you need to do a live draft, do a home draft, do something like that, because there's no substitute. I mean, I'm in a whole bunch of leagues now, and I join leagues now specifically for people. Like, I don't care about the settings, and don't let John Bosch hear that. I really don't. I don't care about the settings. I don't care about any of the, you know, the banners and that sort of thing. I don't care if your league has superpowers. I'm now in it for the people who are in the leagues, which is, again, why I do John Bosch leagues, because I think he brings in a whole bunch of people that I love to play with. But that's really – and I felt bad. Like, TA7 looks amazing. But this is a really, like, right now, personally, this is a tough year for me. And we're working through a few things. And it was just like the timing was awful. And I'm like, can you hold that league for like a year? I mean, it'll be fine, right? They won't mind not drafting until next year. It'll be good.
I mean, it's not like I don't start four leagues a year or anything. So, yeah, definitely not starting at least one next year.
Well, we'll have to get together and figure out a personnel mix that is going to be just magnificent.
Yeah, and Bosch turned me down too, so it's okay.
But it was Bosch's idea to do the league. I love that. I saw that. That was just beautiful.
All right, so let's get away from cheating. Give me a month at least. Like, are you a right after the draft? Do you like to wait till May, June? Are you an August guy, like a weirdo?
No, I'm not an August guy. May's fine. I don't mind right after the draft. The problem is if you are in a whole bunch of leagues, everybody wants to start right after the draft. So, like, I'm doing the Pigs 3 auction right now.
Yep.
Insane. But if I was doing, you know, if I was doing a Pigs 3 auction and I'm in a couple of John Bosch leagues, if all of those auctions were going on right now, I just wouldn't be able to handle it. So I do like right after the draft, but I think everybody is just chomping at the bit right now to get them in. And so, look, push it out. They're not going anywhere. I said this the other day. We were having this discussion in the 12 Olympians, and I said to Jesse Reeves, I was like, dude, we can push the draft back. Benny Snell is not going anywhere. And if he does, we can catch him. It's fine.
Damn. See, it's funny. Like, last week, I had seven rookie drafts, two rookie auctions, and we were in the middle of the TA7 startup. This week, one rookie draft.
And don't you wish you had? And what about next week? I mean, next week you're going to be like, man, I wish I had a rookie draft.
No, next week I have at least four.
Oh, they're going on.
Yeah. No one wanted this week for some reason. So apparently this is my week. That's going to be my answer. Like, a good 2 weeks after the draft. First of all, I need to listen to tons of podcasts so people can tell me how to feel about players and to tell me who the hell Mecole Hardman is. And then I'll have a draft. I like a little bit of time. The rush of right after the draft is fun. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, but if I had one league, I don't think I would do it.
Well, and you don't even have time to unpack. Like, yep. You know, all of this stuff happened. You know, Calvin Harmon, who is my number three wide receiver on film, all of a sudden 32 teams for five rounds told us that he was not what they were looking for. You got to listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
Mecole Hardman, one team told us that they thought that he was what they were looking for. So now what do you make of that? I mean, the same thing with Deontay Johnson in Pittsburgh. I mean, all of these things, like how do you unpack this? How do you feel about Bryce Love going in the fourth? How do you, you know, and especially like the week after the draft, how do you get through all of that? How do you go back and look at these guys? How do you assess their landing spot with what you thought before, all in the span of 2 days before your rookie draft? I can't do that.
Are you in any crazy leagues that do it before the NFL draft?
No. I mean, I'm quite gangster. I'm pretty hardcore, but not that hardcore.
It's the idea of it sounds like fun, but again, if I had one draft to do, it would absolutely not be before. But the idea of it does sound fun, because then you are putting your cojones on the table and saying, I like this guy, so that's all that matters.
This year would have been pretty kind to me. I feel like the first round didn't change other than Kelvin Harmon. Kelvin Harmon this year is my John Kelly from last year. He was the guy that I loved, and then the NFL just said, you know what, you shouldn't love him because we don't.
All right, so we are going to jump off of this because you're talking about guys you love. So I kind of want to talk about a guy you love, but more his effect on the team. So I learned who Paris Campbell was from listening to your show.
I love Paris.
See, here's my thing. I love T.Y. Hilton. And I want to know, what does Paris Campbell, who I understand isn't the same player, but he's another fast guy. How does this affect T.Y. Hilton on Colts?
I think it's actually going to be good for T.Y. Hilton. They don't really duplicate at all, at least with what Paris Campbell has done up to this point. I mean, it's hard to project him out as being a field stretcher because he's never done that. Mm-hmm. He is more of a slot receiver, manufacture touches, you know, run bubble screens, run slants. Kind of the things that the Colts have really not had. They thought that they were going to get that in Moncrief, and he never really became that. He was a red zone guy. I mean, it was just kind of a weird.
He's a tight end at this point.
Yeah,
that's what I always thought he was.
But when they drafted him, when he came into the league, everyone was, he was fast. He was going to work close to the line of scrimmage. He was going to create mismatches. And that, I think, is what Paris Campbell does. Now, what that will do for T.Y. Hilton is all of a sudden you've got to respect the middle of the field. You've got to kind of give some attention to Campbell whenever he's got a chance to touch the ball, which means that Hilton stretching the field is going to get maybe a little less attention, maybe a play or two a game. You're going to get that pump fake to Campbell, and T.Y. Gets single coverage over the top, and that's a beautiful thing. So I think it's good all around for the Colts. I love that pick, and I love the fit with Hilton, because I don't think they duplicate each other. It'll be interesting to see how they end up using or disposing of Funchess, and then, you know, what they do with their tight ends. But I really see Campbell as the potential to be an elite slot weapon, which is something with Andrew Luck that's really, really interesting.
And I know the Colts pass a ton, so I guess we're not really worried about targets, right?
No, volume should be there. And I don't think there's any question that T.Y. is the alpha in that receiving corps, even with Campbell on the team, because I don't think you want to. I mean, look what Miami did a few years ago with Landry, and you don't want to run your offense through the slot, but you can use the slot to move your offense and then take. I mean, it's the difference between what Miami did and what the Patriots did. So Edelman was a slot receiver. They didn't run the offense through Edelman, but anytime they needed to move the ball, you know, get that first down, keep matriculating the ball down the field, it was Edelman. Whereas Miami was going, we're just going to throw the ball to run the ball. You know, we're just going to target Landry every play we can get and not even worry about going down the field. I think you'll see the Colts be smart enough to use Campbell in the, all right, if we need something, we can get it. But Hilton is still where the focal point of our offense.
So this, to move on a little bit, not so this bumps Luck up for you also?
I mean, there's not much higher that Luck can go. I mean, he's what? He's top three or four anyway. He's legit. And he's always going to be scoring in that top because of the volume. I think it's nice for him. I think that he'll probably, if you're in a league that rewards like completion percentage, this may help, but I don't think that it's going to be like a huge bump for Luck, but it certainly doesn't hurt him. I mean, you give the man some more weapons and let him go.
Right. What's the highest you've taken Paris Campbell in a rookie draft so far?
I would take him right around 105, 106. That's single quarterback. So bump him down two in super flex, but right around there. So super flex, what, 107, 108? I'd take him there. I like him. I can actually tell you who I've got ahead of Paris Campbell if you give me 30 seconds. So right now I've got Jacobs, N'Keal Harry, Montgomery, and then it's pretty close between Paris Campbell and A.J. Brown.
So you still have A.J. Brown that high?
So yes, I do, because I think he's very talented. And then I go Metcalf, Sanders, and then it's just a mess right from there. So I think that the top two are pretty stable. And then three through seven, I'm interested in. If I end up dropping back any further than seven in a one quarterback, then you're in kind of the lightning round at that point. I mean, yeah. You're making me take tight ends at that point, which is not the answer.
So, well, you know, if you joined the Trade Addicts League with the 1.75 points per reception, yeah, for tight ends,
that's a little better. That's a little better. I apologize. I always think in terms of one quarterback league, because on the dummies, we're
co-host
always one quarterback. And so I go along to get along. Like I said, settings don't matter to me. I can adapt to that sort of thing. So,
yeah. All right. So we are going to, let's actually talk about a Trade Addicts trade, just because we haven't done that yet. Let's find a good one.
Well, you got me the trade expert on, so I
okay,
got
no,
you.
We just talked about AJ Brown. So let's do this. It's sad that Brian's not here to talk about a Brian trade. Trade Addicts for Trade Addicts Leagues, 12 team Superflex PPR tight end premium. Sammy Watkins for the 112, which then turned out to be AJ Brown. So Sammy Watkins, AJ Brown, what are your feelings on the two of them?
I think that at this point right now, I would rather have Sammy Watkins, and I'll tell you why. Because I think that he is going to be a target hog in that offense. I think you saw what happened when the Patriots decided that they were going to funnel the ball away from Tyreek Hill and away from Travis Kelce in that AFC Championship game. And
it was Sammy. They used Sammy in that game.
But a lot of that was a function of what the Patriots did defensively. But I think you're going to see a lot more of Sammy Watkins being the second target behind Kelce, and some games he'll be the number one target. So once he starts doing that, I think you'll be able to trade him for AJ Brown plus, which I would do. I mean, so it's kind of a two-part move, where right now I would take Sammy Watkins. Long term, I want AJ Brown, because I think AJ Brown is the best wide receiver in this class. All right, so I think.
Let's talk Titans for a second, because Stompy has me on full tilt with the Titans. His Mariota hate and his Corey Davis hate, just, I can't even think of words. Should have sent a poet. How do you feel about the Titans right now? How do you feel about AJ Brown landing there? How do you feel about Mariota and Corey Brown? Wow. Corey Davis in general.
So I think that you have to look at the Titans in terms of, this is Mariota's last year under contract. So this is the fifth year option. We'll see what happens with him. I do think that when he's healthy, which hasn't been for, well, I mean, what, he broke his leg, was that 3 years ago? Like, yeah, and he hasn't been right since then. Then he had the arm issues this past year. You're going to see what you've got, but I don't think they're married to Mariota. I think Corey Davis is fantastic. I really do. I think he is a great receiver. He was a guy that I liked coming out of school. I love what he does after he has the ball and the space he creates. So he's another one of these guys, and Andy Isabella does the same thing, although he does it deeper down the field. But he surveys the field as the ball's coming to him, and Corey Davis does this spectacularly, and then is already making a move. By the time he catches it, the defense is thinking he's doing one thing. He already knows what the defense is doing and has reacted to that and gained separation, like, during catch, mid catch, post catch. It's really awesome to watch. And I also think AJ Brown is fantastic and can do multiple things on the field. I think he's a very good slot receiver. You saw that obviously in college. You also saw him once DK Metcalf was hurt, you saw him slide to the outside. So you've got a little bit of flexibility with Brown. The question is going to be, A, is Mariota going to, you know, materialize into an actual NFL quarterback? And the other part of that is the offense in Tennessee going to let them do that? I mean, you saw they kind of dialed things back and put it in Derrick Henry's belly. That may be what they're doing, which is really frustrating as a Corey Davis and an AJ Brown guy. I mean, that's I was sad to see AJ Brown land there because I think both Corey Davis and Brown are fantastic receivers.
Yeah, I know you guys were doing your Friday live stream during, but I was on the Superflex Super Show live stream as also, and I was literally throwing things when the Seahawks passed on him twice.
Yeah, oh,
literally throwing things. I mean, we got an Old Miss wide receiver, so I'm convincing myself it's the right one, even though I'll never really convince myself. I'm just trying to make myself feel better.
If you're a Tyler Lockett guy, that's the right one. I am trying to buy Tyler Lockett wherever I can. I am even throwing caution to the wind and trying to actively trade at this point. And I was in a league where I started looking for Tyler Lockett on teams, realized he was on my team. And then I was mad. I was disappointed that I wasn't going to go out and make a trade for my guy. And I was like, well, but I already have him. So maybe I shouldn't be disappointed. But I was like, you know, doing this like covert, like I really think DK to the outside slides Lockett in. He's going to be super effective on the inside. He's one of the best route runners in his class a few years ago. And it just, oh man, that it just seems beautiful for Lockett. And I think it'll be good for DK too. I mean, Russell Wilson's a fantastic quarterback, but to your point, yes, AJ Brown should have gone there.
AJ Brown, bigger, better Baldwin. That's what I kept telling myself at least. And I say that to cry myself to sleep when I can't sleep at night. But we're going to move on before it starts all over again. Sort of pivoting off of something you just said and hitting up another listener question. Skip Newton at SNewton31. When you are in several leagues, do you take different players so you have a variety, or do you keep taking the same guys if they're available? Thanks, love. He loves the pod. I love you too, buddy. You asked me, I gave you a number. You didn't give me a number. How many leagues are you in?
It's like seven. I pared it down big time this year. I have been in like 15 or 16, but this year I was just like, I can't, like I said, I'm having some things that are making doing Dynasty more difficult right now. So I pared it down. So I'm in seven Dynasty leagues, and hopefully Scott Fish listens to this, right? Hopefully the SFB 9 too. Dude, I'm sure he does. Hi, Scott.
Squee, like a little school-aged girl if I found out that Scott Fish listens to my show. unrelated. But to the actual question, because you were talking about having, you know, trying to trade for Tyler Lockett, finding out he was on your team everywhere. Do you actually take share percentage into account when you are looking at your teams?
I do not. And so here's how I attack that, though, is early in the drafts, I tend to attack positional instead of players. And so I know that the rage is to attack running backs early in a draft. I don't do that. I attack wide receivers. And so it depends on who's there. If I can get Odell Beckham, if I can get Michael Thomas in the first round, I'm happy. Nuke, you know, those types of players. Same thing with the second round. And so I end up getting different players. The further back in the draft, it seems to be where I fall into the my guy syndrome, where because you're taking upside flyers, and there are only so many of those guys, and you kind of have to paint yourself a picture as to how they could get a point where they could perform for you in a fantasy context. So I end up with a lot of the same guys toward the back end of drafts. And oftentimes it's tight ends, because I punt the tight end position unless I pay up for one of those three. So the last couple of years I have had a ton of, and this is going to sound like a humble brag, but it's not. It's just there are tight ends that nobody else wanted. But I had a ton of Jared Cook. I had a ton of Trey Burton. I had a bunch of Eric Ebron, because everybody gave up on Eric Ebron. And so all of a sudden I had three top 10 tight ends on a lot of teams this past year. And normally what I will do with that is just stream. But again, I think it's a lot more, it's a lot easier and maybe even more important with your first few rounds to kind of have that variation, because you never know. I mean, you never know who gets hurt. You never know. So if you have, you know, seven shares of Todd Gurley last year in seven leagues, and he's not in the fantasy playoffs, you're toast. I mean, unless you
perfect example, the year before he would have won you seven championships.
Exactly. And so you never know with that. And so I think getting that variation and kind of diversifying, I guess, to borrow that stock portfolio phrase, is better, and I do it more often early, and then I go and get my guys later.
Yeah, that's pretty much the exact answer I was going to give. Do you let that influence you in trades, per se? Like, if you only have two shares of a guy, or if you have seven shares of a guy, are you more or less likely to trade a guy because of that?
I'm not, but I'm very clinical with my teams. I don't get emotionally invested in players, which sounds weird. Like, I love fantasy football, and I love discussing the players, and I love doing the research, and I love watching the film, and I love all of that. Love talking about it. But when it comes to my teams, like, I'm not emotionally invested in the players. And if I think that this will help my team, I'll do it. And it doesn't matter if I've got seven shares of a guy or if I don't have a player at all. Like, I don't need to go out and get DeAndre Hopkins because I don't have him on a team. I enjoy watching him. I enjoy talking about him. I enjoy, other people asking me questions about him, all of that. And that's plenty. I don't necessarily need him on my team, but if I can go out and trade for DeAndre Hopkins and it's going to help my team, I'm all in.
See, it's funny. Again, Your facade is just falling off. I mean, you call yourself bad, but you're at least throwing all the right answers. I don't know if you've been studying or something.
Oh, we've been doing this a while, man.
All right. Let's see if I could stump you. Do we have anything good? All right. Let's give you a real baby trade here. Trade addict 7. Lamar Miller for Marvin Jones.
Blah. I'm taking Marvin Jones because I think Lamar Miller's out of a job next year.
Do you think Marvin Jones is not?
I think he has a chance of not being. But I don't know. Lamar Miller's so strange. He's the guy that we've all hated for the last 5 years, and he's been a running back two, unless he was a running back one. I mean, like, that's it. Lamar Miller has been very productive and not sexy at all. And I think that maybe my Marvin Jones, the reason why I say Marvin Jones is because one of Kyle's guys for like 4 years in a row. He keeps looking at undervalued players, and he says, oh, well, Marvin Jones is still undervalued. How can that be? And I think that you're seeing it again. And, you know, when he's in a position where he's healthy, he produces. And it's not necessarily orthodox. Like, you watch Marvin Jones play and you're like, there's no way he's going down the field and going up over those guys. And he does. And so I guess that's an ugly one, but I think I'm taking Marvin Jones because I really don't see Lamar Miller pass this year.
All right.
But I've said that for 4 years in a row. So
exactly. Right. Like, it's funny. Like, Lamar Miller falls into what I call the Dez paradox. Lamar Miller didn't even really make it. It's funny, you know, Dez was a wide receiver one, a wide receiver one. Yeah. And, you know, he declined, he had the foot injuries, he got a little older, a little slower. And then all of a sudden, dynasty community just thought he was trash. And it's like, no, he could be a solid wide receiver too. No, worthless. I'll give you a third for him. What? That's not how this, it's, once he is something in your heads, he can be nothing else. And I think that's sort of what happened with Lamar Miller. He was doing so well in Miami with like those 13, 14 touches. Yeah. And we're like, oh man, he's going to Houston. He's going to get 25 touches and he's going to, you know, be the before coming of Saquon Barkley. I mean, like, you know, he never was, but he's been super solid every single year. And we just don't want to admit it.
You allow me a baseball metaphor, but for me, he's like Alex Cora, not as the coach, but when he was a player, he would hit like 270 pinch hitting, and everyone's like, you got to play Alex Cora. You got to play him every day. And then he would play every day and hit like 225. And then, but that, like, that's Lamar Miller. He's so efficient when he's getting fewer touches. And then you give him a whole bunch of touches and he's inefficient. And you're like, well, he's no good. But he's still putting up points. It's just not as pretty.
It's not the way you thought. So all of a sudden, everyone just sort of hates on him. So, yeah, and that is going to bring us into our next question. Man, I don't know. I did not do this on purpose, but there are so many solid transitions going on right now. I'm feeling great about this. Our guest from last week, Frank Scanduro, at DHH _Fuego. If you had a crystal ball and knew the Colts, Texans, Chiefs, Bucks, and Bills were going to draft a running back within the first three, this is a long question. I should have summarized. It's too late now. We're going to draft a running back within the first three rounds next year. What current running back are you invested in? Who could still help contribute to one of those teams in a committee for the next 2 to 3 years? So pretty much who survived the draft this year that can survive the draft next year, maybe not holding on to their job as strong as they have it right now, but will still contribute to a team. Now, you're saying Lamar Miller is not that guy.
I don't think so. And probably if you're taking a top three round running back, most of the incumbent backs are toast. So I'm going to end up looking at pass catchers. I think that I would lean toward, like, would you said the Colts, right?
Yeah.
So like Nyheim Hines, who caught 60 balls this past year, like that's the type of player I think that will retain value. I would hate to see Marlon Mack get shoved aside,
and it's going to make me sad.
My teams end up with, so a lot of my later round guys were Marlon Mack, were Chris Carson, you know, a lot of guys who are on thin ice and So, and I ended up with a bunch of Royce Freeman last year because he was falling to like five or six when I was doing my rookie drafts. Not when he was going two, that was ridiculous. Yeah. But when he was going mid first, I had a bunch of Royce Freeman. And I think that he's another guy that if he ever gets a hold of that backfield, he's still in danger of losing that backfield. You know, if he ever ends up taking it over from Philip Lindsay with, you know, the injury and size concerns and that whole thing. So again, like pass catchers. So you're talking, I love James Williams in Kansas City, even though, you know, who knows? So far. Yeah. I mean, maybe he doesn't make that team, but he's the type of guy. If you ended up drafting a top three round running back, some of this class coming in, I don't know if have you looked ahead? Have you ended up
not as much as you have, let's just say.
So, well, no, that's I haven't gone full fledged into 2020. Let's not get crazy. Like I just wrapped up the 2019 class. Like we're happy about it. I'm taking a little bit of a break, but a lot of the running backs that are in the top of this next class are not what I would consider tremendous pass catchers. So there are a few. I mean, obviously DeAndre Swift is fantastic. There are a few guys who catch the ball, but there are more who are closer to Nick Chubb than they are Saquon Barkley. That's not a knock on Nick Chubb. He's a fantastic running back, but if you pair him with a pass catcher, he's going to be more effective and your team is going to be more effective. And I think that's going to be the case. And so, I mean, even so Devin Singletary in Buffalo.
I'm glad I was going to make sure you touched on this because I want to hear your thoughts on that.
I think that he is a better pass catcher than people give him credit for. And he is a guy who can spell touches inside. So he's not very big. And you watch him play and you think, wow, he's going to be a space back. And then you actually dig into his film and he's running up the middle and he's doing things that you wouldn't necessarily anticipate for a guy his size. So I think that he is going to be, and especially if they drafted another running back next year in the top three rounds, he could be that space back. It was weird that they signed Yeldon because that's a similar role to what I envisioned for Singletary is being that guy who can be the space back, but in a pinch, he's a pass catcher plus. And those are oftentimes like I will target that type of player because you get the added value. It's the Gio Bernard. It's that role where if the lead back goes down, you've got an extra bump now, even though you just had him as a pass catcher. You only needed him as a flex play, but now you've got a horse. And I think Singletary can be that guy. I think the sneaky one is in Tampa. And I'm going to – maybe not. Maybe he doesn't materialize. Bruce Anderson is actually a fantastic running back, and I'm going to get a lot of – push back because there are a lot of Ronald Jones truthers out there. Ronald Jones couldn't catch me if you could throw me 5 yards. You can't. Like, I don't know if you saw my tweet last week, but Drew Brees has one more catch in his career than Ronald Jones does and is catching the ball twice as far down the field. So his yards per catch is twice what Ronald Jones is. This is Drew Brees. So, look, maybe Ronald Jones materializes. He's not going to be a pass catcher. And I do think that Bruce Anderson, who they picked up as an undrafted free agent, can be. And so he's a guy that I'm taking flyers on in, what, fifth round? Unless you're in a league with Riley Biamaster or Matt Foreman, fifth round, you know, stash him, have fun.
J. Mike was on the clock in the Trade Addict 6 rookie draft, and Bruce Anderson wasn't in the MFL database, and he's like, what's
the protocol, your
rule on this? And I'm just like, you got to draft who's there. I mean, I'm not gonna go through the thing of creating people and dealing with that afterwards, and you know, if they get created to have to remember to switch it out. Just he's like, all right, no, I get it. That's cool. I understand. I'm just going to wait this one out. He waited to the end of his timer. Bruce Anderson got added to the database before his clock ran out, and he drafted him. He must have called someone or, like, I don't know, or threatened somebody for something. I can't imagine J. Mike threatening somebody.
No, but you could imagine MFL going, the nicest man in Dynasty football needs Bruce Anderson added to the database. Here we go.
J. Mike wants him. J. Mike gets him.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was a hilariously wonderful story.
He was a bad – sorry, I don't mean to – digress here, but man, he was a back that initially Riley Biamaster was on Bruce Anderson early and really liked him, and I started watching, and he, like, you see his highlights and he looks fantastic because everybody looks fantastic on highlights. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, look, we're going to dig deeper, and the thing that sticks out about Bruce Anderson to me is they didn't throw the ball an awful lot. He's a fantastic route runner and has tremendous hands. But the thing that really stood out is he's not a guy who needs a clean hole when he's running. So a lot of guys, if there's traffic near their feet, they get hung up and they go down pretty easy. Bruce Anderson, that's not an issue with him. He's got great feet in traffic, and so he ends up springing plays for big gains that you expect him to get taken down because there's so much clutter near the line of scrimmage. But again, he was an undrafted free agent. He's probably nothing. Don't worry about it. I'll snag him in the fifth.
Yeah, and we have, I think, one person in the chat right now, Mike McKinnon. And he is echoing everything you said. He loves him. He's good. Can routinely get him in the fifth.
His mother now follows me on Twitter because I tweeted out my film notes of Bruce Anderson. I was like, so that's amazing. Hi, Mrs. Anderson. You know,
that is amazing. that has to actually feel ridiculously cool.
it's such a weird thing though, because you don't. This is my least favorite part of fantasy football is you end up separating the humanity from these guys. And you forget, I mean, like somebody would say, oh, DK Metcalf sucks. And you forget that DK Metcalf is a 20-year-old guy trying to live out his dream. And who the hell are you on Twitter? Say, you know, and when I do my film notes and when I tweet anything, like, I never at players. I never.
Never, like, ever, ever.
No, and not even if it's a good thing. Like, they don't need to deal with that. Like, we're over here doing our thing, and we should be appreciative of them, but we should be appreciative enough to respect their space. And amen. So, it frustrates me because there's this real struggle with, you know, fantasy football separates all of that into statistics and points, and it doesn't take into account that person at all. But then there's this whole other side where, you know, you've got these guys have real life going on, and we forget that. And a guy gets hurt, and, you know, or a guy's. Oh, so there was the kid that the miracle in Minnesota. And there's the kid that missed the tackle and Stephon Diggs scored a touchdown, and people were all over that kid. And it's like, he was a rookie. Mm-hmm. Like, relax. Like, you think he didn't mean to do that, and he probably feels awful. And then people just pile on. And so that's the, and injuries too, like that sort of thing, concussions. And like, I really have a hard time with that part of it. I think that to me is the hardest part about fantasy football is just coming to grips with, and we really try not to separate that humanity, but it's impossible with what we're doing.
Yeah. It's absolutely part of playing a game with real people in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I wish now is one of the times I always wish Brian was here, but Brian is such a freaking nice guy that he is the kind of person wherever he's like, no, I can't stand this player. He keeps fumbling the ball. he's a good person. I don't mean it as a human being. He feels the need to specify every single time. And I love and hate it at the same time, because it's like, you're right. Especially like, there's a ridiculous amount of negativity on the internet in general, and Twitter gets ugly at times. So you lose the fact that these are real people. So you start throwing out words like, I hate this player. And it's like, you don't realize it, but your brain just starts internalizing, I hate this guy, I hate this guy, I hate this guy. And yet that's a person that you know zero about as a human being.
Well, and think about how upset fantasy analysts or fantasy players on Twitter get. So, say I put up a ranking and someone comes up and says, that's the worst ranking I've ever seen. This is terrible. You know, what you're doing is trash. Like, that's the exact same thing that we're doing, except for I might have put in, what, 60 hours into my rankings, and DK Metcalf just put 20 years into becoming an NFL player. Like, we get short-sighted sometimes, and mm-hmm. I think that it's the thing that kind of redeems us is – like Sal Stefanelli and Scott Fish, and I know Bobby does, Bobby Koch does a lot with this, but the charity aspect and the giving back, and mm-hmm. every league that I'm in, if it's not already written into the bylaws, we do that. Like, I will talk to somebody and get that put in where we're giving a piece of that. And generally, it's an entry fee, so like one entry fee, so two. A charity. And so, yeah, you're not, maybe that doesn't affect the players. Maybe that doesn't help them out. Maybe it doesn't even, maybe it's just for us. But I feel like if we can give back, if we can help somebody else out, at least that redeems our humanity a little bit. And
absolutely. And if you don't do that, you absolutely should. All of the Trade Addicts leagues do give more than an entry league entry fee to charity. And I stole Bobby's idea for his Superflex Super Friends or whatever it is, the charity best ball dynasty league. And Brian Haar is in Bobby's league and in one of mine. And he did do what you're saying. It's not a player he hates or anything. You know, his bae, Saquon Barkley, if he wins, he donates to Saquon Barkley's charity.
Yeah. See, that's awesome. I wish more people would do that. Sporting News Radio with Brian Haar, the nicest man in the world.
God, why aren't you here, Brian? All right, so we have one more trade and two more questions. So let's get this done. Let's give an order. What's an order? We'll do 1-1-1. One question, trade, question. Since we can't escape anything without talking about Mecole Hardman a little bit, Dave Wright at FF_Spaceman. We all know the Mecole situation by now. However, I was curious if you guys could discuss the players who produced like Hardman in college with his athletic profile and similar landing spots and how they've fared in the NFL and what you all think his price should be.
Oof. That's a...
Now, I want to start this out by saying, I think it was you, actually, who said that Tyreek Hill was the 1% of the 1%.
Yeah.
Of an outlier. So right now, just price-wise, if you're thinking Mecole equals Tyreek Hill, take a step back. Because yes. It's not going to happen. Unless he is the 1% of the 1% of the 1%. In which case... The Chiefs are just great at drafting.
Yeah, but even with Tyreek Hill, they took four shots at the can before they got Tyreek, and
I'm still holding out hope for Chris Conley. By the way,
he was I love Chris Conley. He's so sad a spark that he went freak. To the
Jaguars.
Yeah,
I have so many shares that are now just not going to get me anywhere because I really like Dede Westbrook. I have so many shares of him too.
But, well, okay. I mean, if you're gonna buy into an offense, the Jags.
Nick Foles, baby. BDN. No, we're going to talk about Mecole. That's what we're doing right now. Are there any?
I don't think there are. Like not exactly. I mean, like the closest things that I can come up with are like Steve Smith, but he was more productive in college and he's exactly. more physical. And then the other guy that's somewhat close is Philip Dorsett.
That's the only one I could think of.
Who was similar in production and I was going to say the team was pretty good. I mean, coming in with Andrew Luck, although Andrew Luck was hurt for some of his tenure there, but that's, I guess, the closest thing. But
and it was taken ridiculously earlier than everyone thought he should have been.
Yeah, he was a first round pick. I mean, that's the. So, I don't know. I would. I'm a second round. Mecole Hardman guy. So here's my philosophy, and I've been thinking a lot about this over the last couple of days with Hardman. So a guy like Kelvin Harmon fell. So he fell to the sixth round. There were 32 teams passed five rounds on him, but it only took one team to overdraft Mecole Hardman. So I think that I am a lot more concerned with draft capital of guys falling than I am automatically assuming that a player is much better than I thought he was when he gets overdrafted by one team. And that's not to say Hardman is bad. He may be fantastic, and I think he's going to get some run. The biggest thing from a football standpoint is he's probably the best kick returner in college football last year. Like, he's fantastic as a kick returner, and that will help the Chiefs out. So right there, you have improved. And if you subscribe to the Bill Belichick theory of all three phases of the game and you watch the Patriots spend money on special teams players and you're going, what are they doing? And then they win because they had a punt land inside the 10-yard line six times in the Super Bowl. That's like, I get it. And if you are on this, he's going to be Tyreek Hill, I think you're going to be disappointed. If you're on this, he might get some run this year. I think he's very raw as a route runner. So was Tyreek Hill coming in. He was basically a running back when he came in. So if you're expecting this Mecole Hardman splashed onto the scene, I think you're going to be disappointed. If you're expecting him to come in and catch 30 or 40 balls and look, I think the real loser for this is going to be Patrick Mahomes, and nobody wants to hear somebody say that, but you had this inevitable regression from 50 touchdown passes.
Mm-hmm.
Now you take away his number one wide receiver. I mean, not his number one target because Travis Kelce's still there, also 30 now. But you take away the number one receiver and a guy who can get open, has so many facets to his game. I mean, he can take a jet sweep. He can take a bubble screen. He can run a slant. He can run a nine and get over the top and create enough separation that Alex Smith was the best deep ball thrower in the NFL 2 years ago. I mean, like, so it's not, second round, Mecole Hardman is a second round pick and he's got huge upside as a second round pick. And I'm willing to take him there. In my first round, unless I am picking 12, and even then I'm probably not taking him, but I don't feel like I've got the leeway unless I won my league to take a swing like Mecole Hardman.
All right, so there you go. And
sorry, Spaceman, that's not what you wanted to hear. I know it is.
Yeah, it's tough when the answer is no one, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, Mecole Hardman didn't produce in college. His athletic profile, he's very fast. Okay, so he didn't have a great market share. He didn't have great film because he only caught 60 balls in 3 years of college. So what do you like? Look, he's good against man-to-man. He finds holes in zones, but then kind of loses the holes in zones. So I don't know. He's not very polished. He's not a guy I want to bet on.
Yeah, but you said the smart thing with if you won your league, you have the 112, you might as well take that home run swing.
Yeah, that's fine. But if I'm going to do that, in this draft, a guy like DK Metcalf, people are trading out of this draft like crazy. It's rats off a ship. Mm-hmm. And I get it. I mean, this draft is ugly. But you could trade up and take a guy like DK Metcalf. You might be able to trade up and take one of these running backs, although probably not, because a lot of people are still hanging on to that running backs are game changers. So there are players that I would advocate trading up to get before I took a Mecole Hardman.
Like Paris Campbell.
I love Paris.
Just wanted to throw it in there because I knew that makes sense. All right, so let's get to our last Trade Addicts trade of the night. This was a Trade Addicts 2 trade. David Johnson for Adam Thielen and the 107. So let's just pretend this is your boy. David Johnson for Adam Thielen and Paris Campbell.
I'd rather have the Thielen side. Thielen and the 107. Even if it is not Paris Campbell, I think I'd rather have Thielen and the 107. And I love DJ. I really do.
I was going to ask what your feelings on him in this new offense are.
So DJ was in the worst offense in the history of offenses last year, and he finished 9 as a PPR back.
Fine in saying it can't be worse. Like, that to me is a perfect argument, and I'm okay with that.
He literally had no offensive line, no weapons in the passing game, and the quarterback who they wouldn't even let throw to win a game. Like, they just, like, they took DJ out. They ran the ball up the middle instead of letting Rosen try to win a game. Like, this team was the worst coached, the worst just run franchise last year, and DJ still finished as a top 10 PPR back. Again, that said, Adam Thielen is a perennial top 12. He's a wide receiver 1 right on that border. And you're getting a bump where, again, I assume this is a Trade Addicts league, so this is super flex. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now all of a sudden you're in that David Montgomery, Paris Campbell, AJ Brown, Miles Sanders range. Yeah, I'm going to take, let's say I can get Miles Sanders and Thielen. So now I've got a running back 2 and a wide receiver 1 for a running back 1. I'm going to make that trade, I think.
Yeah, I like both sides of this, to be honest. I've been buying up some DJ around. Well, I've been trying to lately. I got beat out on this one. I just got beat out in Trade Addicts 4. So I think I might just go nuts and just horribly overpay. So if anyone in the Trade Addicts leagues or any of my leagues, really.
Bless you.
Now I have to edit. Great. any of my leagues has David Johnson and you want to send him to me, I will probably overpay for him right now because I'm pissed off that other people keep beating me out. But yeah, no, I really like this trade. But the important question, the question that may cause a problem between us, Thielen or Diggs?
Diggs.
All right, good.
That's all my heart, man. Like, Thielen's produced more, but you've just seen those flashes with Diggs, and oh man, he could be a top 2, 3, 4. I mean, he's amazing. He's so good. Feed him, right. Give him the ball.
Absolutely. All right. So sadly, we are on our last question. Steve Cutright at number crunch NUBRR. KRUNCHER, number cruncher. In a super flex league with Pat Mahomes, Matt Ryan, Lamar Jackson, and he has the 101, who do you trade and when? See, I saved this because I want you to see that you are not as bad at trading as you think you are.
You think so? That one. So I haven't seen DLF's latest ADP, but before this month, before he was drafted by the Cardinals, Kyler Murray was 14. I'm going to bet he's cracked the top 10 at this point.
Oh, yeah. Ryan tweeted out he was QB 8.
Ah, so there you go. That's probably the gentleman that I would be trading. Although, if I could get, I guess it depends on what I could get for Mahomes too. I'm looking at those top tier, whoever's got the most hype, because I think you still have. I really like Lamar Jackson. I think that he gives you a really solid floor with his legs, and I don't think that we've seen his ceiling with his arm. Murray gives you similar with his legs. He's very mobile. You're going to see that offense spread out. Mahomes is fantastic. So you trade away the guy you can get the most for and then roll your team with the other two. At least that's what I would do.
So it's all in your head. I mean, that's exactly if you can get one of those Godfather deals for Mahomes, which I'm yet to ever get, that's English in the right order. Like I have a few Superflex Mahomes and a few Saquon Barkley shares, and I've never gotten those Twitter like trade polls. Like I've never gotten anything like ridiculous like that, and it makes me so angry. In value wise, I think I would rank this Mahomes, Kyler, Lamar, Ryan, and like you said, get what you can get the most for,
yeah,
and then ride with the rest. In a super flex league, are you okay with two quarterbacks or do you like rolling with three
or more? I would prefer having three, but I attack quarterback a lot like I attack tight end, where even in a super flex league, I might take one guy earlier than I would want to. But I am waiting so long to get that second one. And most of the time, I'm waiting to get that first one. Unless I think I can spark a run, I'm waiting to get that first quarterback because I think that you can create a striation between your position players. And then if you look at quarterbacks, once you get down, and it's a lot like tight end, once you get down past like four or five, that next group of about 15 is really similar. So, you know, I don't mind rolling. And if I roll with some of the lower end guys, then I may end up with three. But if you can end up with a team where you've got, you know, two legitimate receivers and two or three running backs, maybe I just fill in the week that I don't have I have a bye with my quarterback with one of those stud running backs and call it good. Man, it's not orthodox, I understand, but that I have a hard time. Superflex drives me crazy sometimes, and I'm digressing again, but I just heard the Dynasty Trades HQ, and they talked about Daniel Jones as a first round pick because he's a quarterback. I'm like, guys, you're falling into the same trap that the NFL is, where they're paying too much for guys who are not actually good, who are not actually going to produce because the position is a premium. And I mean, that's why we've been talking about, oh man, some of these just terrible Bortles. Oh yeah, Bortles produced. I can't speak. I'm sorry, Bobby. He's given him up.
He's moved on.
Yeah. But there are some of these guys that just should not, you know, you should never have to think about AJ McCarron. I should never have to utter AJ McCarron, but I had AJ McCarron on Superflex leagues because John Bosch likes Superflex. And so I'm beholden to Superflex. And I think that sometimes we, in our haste and our thirst to create more points and more scoring and more action, and we end up actually devaluing or maybe giving too much value to guys who don't deserve it. And I don't know. There's got to be a happy medium. Kyle likes to go with like a quarterback premium scoring. That's pretty interesting, but
yeah,
no, I don't know.
I do love the, it's like positive points for completion, negative points for like the, and it's awesome. I've seen it mapped out and I've seen it work and it's awesome. But to me, the reason I love Superflex more than one QB is clearly my brand. It makes quarterbacks tradable. It doesn't matter how equal or correct the scoring is one quarterback, there's still just no movement in quarterbacks.
Yeah, that's fair. I suck at trading. Give me one quarterback.
Two tight end is terrible. Never do it.
No. And it's funny. I get in a lot of like tight end premium that's like 1.25 or 1.5. And I'm like, don't tell anybody, but that doesn't actually matter.
Does not matter. Yeah. Which is why I went to 1.75. And honestly, even if I didn't do all, I want all my leagues to be the same at this point, just because I like being able to compare value across, I probably would have gone to 2, like if I was starting it all over right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
Well, 2 points per reception, not 2 tight ends. Needed to clarify because God knows.
I was with you. I was good. I got the video. I was right with you. I was lockstep. And it is like tight ends are so touchdown dependent, like the bottom. So once you get out from the top 3 and Austin Hooper, who caught 70 balls last year, very quietly. Once you get out of that, everybody's touchdown dependent. Just start the tight end that's playing the Patriots, the Giants, or the Browns, like whatever.
Yep. Giants and Browns, chase them for years.
I'm a Pats fan. Every game, I mean, somebody is scoring against the Pats from the tight end position. Did I just end the interview because I said I was a Pats fan?
No, I knew you were a Pats fan. I was going to ask the question: Is that a regional thing for you? Like, is that just like the closest team?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I grew up like. Look, I grew up with Dick McPherson in the 0-16 season, and like that, you know, Irving Fryer and Steve Grogan and John Stevens, and I used to watch with my grandfather. Like that was what we did. We'd go down, drive 200 miles to my grandfather's house every weekend, and we'd watch the Patriots because he had cable TV, and we had poor people's TV at my house. So we had like ABC, NBC, sometimes PBS, and that was about it. So that was how I ended up becoming a Patriots fan, is because that was how I grew up. It was time that I got to spend with my grandfather. And you know, now I'm not as diehard as Kyle's like the Patriots fan, and I love the Pats, and I think the thing that draws me to them now is the approach. It's Belichick saying stats are for losers, and at the same time having Ernie Adams, who is probably the best sabermetrician when it comes to football analytics in the NFL, and he's had him on staff since he came to New England. Like, they've been buddies since college, and it's just like they started Kraft Analytics. Like, they have a whole department specifically devoted to, you know, analyzing football, insofar as Ernie Adams will tell Belichick, or you know, that he should be running junk defenses in games where they're ahead by 21 when the other team is in the red zone, because it skews the percentage that you're running your real red zone defense, so then other teams, when they do their analytics, don't have the exact numbers, don't have the read on you because you junked them. I mean, like, stuff like that. And
it's
like
infuriating how good they are.
But like the attention to detail and the minutia, like as a fantasy football analyst, as a fantasy football player, like I can appreciate that. And I can also appreciate the fact that instead of sitting there going, you're going to come in and you're going to run my scheme, and this is how we're going to do things, and we're going to square peg round hole, he says, oh, well, I got Rob Gronkowski. He is a Hall of Fame level tight end. Let's run the offense through the tight end. You're not going to see that next year. Next year, they're going to run the ball. Next year, they're going to run the ball a ton because they don't have a Hall of Fame tight end anymore. Now they have 3 really good running backs, and that's what they'll do. And it's just fun. And I think that's why I gravitate now toward the Pats. Sorry, I just hijacked you. We're now a Patriots podcast. Welcome to the Patriots Trade Addicts podcast.
I mean, no, thank you. But we are we have been a tight end podcast lately. And speaking of, again, the one guy in the chat, Mike McKinnon brings up the idea of yardage bonuses for tight ends. So instead of 0.1 per yard, it would be like 0.15 per yard.
Yeah, I think you could do that. And I think you could do something with like first. So Scott Fish did that with the SFB with first downs. And I think that if you did kind of a combination where you did a bonus per catch, a bonus per yard, and some sort of first down bonus, you could make tight ends viable. But now, I mean, you're doing a lot of manipulation there, and you'd have to kind of figure out what the ramifications are.
Yeah, I mean, I love the idea of being able to look at a stat line and knowing what your guy scored. Yeah. But then there's also, we need to make tight ends not the worst thing ever. Though I think the player influx is going to help that. Like, there's been a lot of the past 2-ish, 3 years. There's been a lot of good players, and once they mature into actual tight ends in the league, I'm hoping we get 12-ish good tight ends.
Yeah, but you need the really good quarterbacks to kind of facilitate the really good tight ends. I mean, you look at where the tight ends are coming from. It's almost like a slot receiver. You either need an elite quarterback or a really bad quarterback, because they either have to notice that mismatch and exploit it, or be running and needing that check down.
Just safety blanket, yeah.
That's it.
All right, man. Well, I hope you enjoyed this, because to me, this was awesome. And I mean, I'll put Brian on notice if you just want to come back every week.
I had a fantastic time. This was great. No, this is usually Kyle and I record on Tuesday, so this is right in my wheelhouse. Maybe we'll bump Brian and Kyle out. They can do their own show.
They can do their own professional sounding show, and we'll have fun.
I'll say the only problem is they have the two radio voices, and it, like listening to you and me, it's like Barney Gumble and Pinky from Pinky and the Brain. And so you're just like, I'm just like, J Brain, you know, and
Narf, egad.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Let's do it. Well, again, before we do actually head out, remind everyone who you are, what you do, and where they could find it.
I am Zach Reed at TacitAssassin13 on Twitter, and you can find me over at the Dynasty Dummies podcast with my better half, Kyle LeBrecq. We drop a pod every Tuesday. We have a website. People occasionally find their way there. I've got about 7,000 words on rookies. If you're interested, the draft already happened, but I have my film notes up there. And look, we have a lot of fun with it. We try to be accessible. Our podcast is geared toward your home league. It's not geared toward my analyst league. It's geared toward your home league. So we're the dummies. We try to bring you the accessible version of Dynasty Fantasy Football.
And like I said in the beginning, I wasn't making that up or anything, though. That would have been oddly specific to make up how I started listening to the Dummies about 2 years ago. And I agree. It is a great show that you should be listening to, because it's good. I mean, that's the real thing. It's good. And you get a nice little ditty at the beginning of the show.
It still blows my mind that Ryan McDowell listens. Like, some of these things, you know.
It's awesome. So now my part. Oh, no, I'm going to help plug you a little bit. Patreon.com/DynastyDummies. Give these guys your money. Get, you know.
This is this is the pitch. We give you nothing, and you give us a dollar. And
it's a dollar, man.
Everybody's happy.
Give me a dollar first, I'll be honest, but then go. I'm sure you got $2. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Your wife doesn't have to know. Or if she does know, just pretend we're charities. You know, it's fine. It's not. I mean, it totally is lying. I was going to say, it's not lying if she doesn't find out. But yeah, it is. But no. Everything Dynasty Dummies is awesome. If they had a t-shirt, I would buy it. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
We're efforting. I'll see what I can do.
Nice. on my side, speaking of, tradeaddictspod.storeenvy.com, patreon.com/tradeaddictspod. And it's funny, like, you brought up, you being mentioned in the same sentence as Gabe with the openings. We actually have a new Gabe opening that we're debuting on this show.
Yes.
And I totally should have talked about that at the beginning of the show and just been like, damn, yo, that opening, right, guys? And I totally dropped the ball on that one. So I hope you guys enjoyed it an hour and 20 minutes ago, because I think that's about how long we've been recording. So thank you for stopping by. Oh, man, I did. See, this is how pumped I've been. I did not do the end of the show sheet sign off, and I am not tired. So seriously, man. Good night, Zach. I don't know what to do anymore. I don't know what to do with my hands.
I can wrap you. This is how we do it at the Dynasty Dummies. We say, that has been Dynasty Outhouse. I am at Tacit Assassin 13. This has been the Trade Addicts Podcast. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Addicts Podcast. You can follow the pod on Twitter at Trade Addicts Pod, and follow our hosts at Zion House and at Brian Hart. Please remember to subscribe and rate and review.